Windy City Queer Cast.
Gays and lesbians are all the rage.
We're here and we're queer.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
We're talking mega gay.
Ooh, I like that.
I'm Amy Matheny.
This program is brought to you in part by American Airlines, offering exciting GLBT vacations online at aa.com/rainbow.
You're listening to the Windy City Queercast, show number 562. I'm Amy Matheny, and today our whole show is an Oscar prediction show, but we have some breaking news that just came out today, recording this show on Friday. On Friday, February the 21st, 2014. Today, federal judge Sharon Coleman ordered Cook County Clerk David Orr to begin providing marriage licenses to same-sex couples immediately. That is right, folks. We're not waiting here in Chicago until June 1st to get married. So in 2013, the Illinois legislature passed a law that allowed same-sex couples to marry as of June 1st. Well, today, this court ruling by Judge Coleman recognizes same-sex couples' constitutional right to marry now and says it is arbitrary, this date of June 1st. Now, this only applies to Cook County. And if there's urgency in my voice, it's like, I know you all want to run out and go get married on Monday. So the ruling only applies to Cook County. So you have to come to Cook County to get your marriage licenses. And this all happened because the ACLU of Illinois, Lambda Legal, filed these lawsuits on behalf of 13 same-sex couples. And there's more about that on the ACLU website, and I really appreciate Jill Metz of Jill Metz and Associates getting me some of this information. And definitely there are many resources to help. And if you have questions or you might need legal services or protections, Jill Metz and Associates on Broadway Avenue in Chicago, JillMetzLaw.com is a great resource. But it is official in the land. There is an up-to-date fact sheet that's at lambdalegal.org. You can find out at lambdalegal.org, and it's /publications/IL-marriage-FAQ for Illinois Marriage Law Frequently Asked Questions. I'm sure you can Google that. But essentially today, people can get married now in Illinois, in Cook County. You have to be over 18 years of age. You can't be legally married. You cannot be closely related to each other. And, you must be legally competent to enter into a civil contract. So, essentially, you can apply for a marriage license today, which is February 21st, although this podcast isn't going out on February 21st. So you can apply for a marriage now. As soon as you're hearing this, you can apply. Your license becomes effective after you receive your license, and it expires 60 days later. So, guys, we're getting married. This new marriage law will still go in effect on June 1st. And, you know, for different reasons, you may want to wait to get married. But some people don't want to wait. And for health reasons or other protections or reasons, they don't want to wait. And now they are saying it is arbitrary. There is no reason that you should have to wait. So anyhow, it is official across the land. And I feel we'll be talking about this more and more and more. And officially marriage will become legal to everybody in Illinois June 1st. But once again, people can come to Cook County as of today, February 21st, 2014. And it is the law of the land now that gay couples have the right to be married. And what's really interesting is because there has been, some people who are opposed to this Illinois Religious Freedom Protection and Marriage Fairness Act happening in June 1st that have been trying to get it stayed, to try to get this not to come to fruition in June 1st. And today really just puts a hammer down on that and a gavel down on that and says, wow, okay. might as well stop barking, because this is now the law of the land. It's a historic day, folks, in Illinois. And we are going to continue on now. Going to take a real quick break and be back with Richard Knight Jr. And let's don't even take a break. You know what? Because it's my favorite time of the year. It's Oscar. It's our big Academy Award, the high holidays for us queers, the Academy Awards. And we cannot do an Academy Award prediction or conversation show without our movie critic, our movie queen, Richard Knight Jr. Hello, Richard Knight Jr. How are you?
I love the high holidays. It really is the high holidays,
right?
for the gays, isn't it?
It's like our holiday season. It starts with the Oscars and it ends with the Tonys, you know? And then we all bust out of our houses for Gay Pride and through Market Days. And that's the sporting season, the summer season. So
yes.
It is the 86th year of the Academy Awards coming up here on March 2nd. They'll be airing and we'll know. And the envelope, you know, says, or the Oscar goes to. But I wanted to just start off and just talk about for you, because also I know you were such a huge part this year of Reeling and the Gay and Lesbian Film Festival coming back to Chicago and a lot of those wonderful independent films and queer films. What is kind of your overview of this past year of movie making for in general, and also movie making based on queer characters?
Well, boy, that's a big question.
It is. But let's start big, and then we'll go really small. Like, who do you think's going to win?
Let's start with part one.
the year in
movies.
General. Yeah.
Say again?
Just let's start with the year in movies, and then we'll go to the queer year in movies.
Well, you know, what's happened is, and this has happened over, I don't know, many years, I guess, is that the movies, the business has sort of like segmented into different, you know, the summer blockbuster period is now moved. So that's become this big behemoth that everything gets behind. Mm-hmm. I mean, the Oscars are all about these sort of dramas, these serious contenders, and there's this very small window that audiences seem to have for this stuff. Once again, we have the popular movies versus kind of the not so popular, the serious movies. It used to be, I would say maybe the first four decades of the Oscars, really the best picture of the year wasn't always the most critically acclaimed picture of the year.
Okay.
It was kind of like the popular picture of the year. And so several years ago, what was it, like maybe 2 or 3 years ago, when they once again expanded the Best Picture category into like,
right,
10 movies or that.
We're nine like, this year.
Or nine, yep. Nine, which is so bizarre. Like, well, okay, you couldn't have thrown one more in there? Come on.
Yep.
I liked that because it took it away. You know, not everybody is going to go see 12 Years a Slave.
Yep.
An excellent film.
I'm going to watch it this week. I'm going to see it this week.
Okay. Well, get ready because it's a very harrowing experience.
Yep.
And not easily forgotten.
Yeah.
You know, we live in this age where everybody is queuing up to see the Hunger Games,
yep,
Catching Fire.
Yep.
And yet when it comes to awards, stuff like that, it's like kind of a dirty word. You don't, there's no way we can ever give an award for a picture like that.
Right.
So I guess there's this kind of weird, schizophrenic thing that has happened with the movies.
Mm-hmm.
It's really, really divided, and the Oscars seem to try to group all this stuff together, you know, because they know that, you know, most of the people don't go see August Osage, or is it August Osage?
August Osage.
They go see the Hulk, the American Avenger, or whatever, you know, the big blockbustery Hercules picture is. And, you know, maybe Philomena is not the picture for them. So this is kind of this weird way that the Oscars try to cram it all in together, which is actually, you know, this starts with the Golden Globes because it's so bizarre.
Right.
That you have, you know, somebody who, people competing in these categories, that, like, how do they put those two folks together or those pictures? It's so bizarre. And I think it really kind of, maybe it speaks to just society in general, that it's becoming more and more divisive and compartmentalized.
Mm-hmm.
Let's really get, you know, philosophical here.
Well, and it's interesting, too. You know, my thought when I look back over this year of movies, and obviously I'm probably talking about the award contender movies, not as much the independent film scene, because I can't say that I know as much about the independent film scene, except just thinking there's become something kind of renegade about the independent film scene that to me harkens back this past year, that harkens back to the early days of like Sex Lies Videotape, where I feel like there's some good independent filmmaking that's happening where you can really tell it's like, I filmed this, you know, on a very shoestring budget, but some good actors are in it and it's good storytelling, you know, like that kind
mm-hmm.
of really grassroots feel. And maybe that's countering, like you said, these huge comic book and mega movies, popular movies that people want to see. But this was kind of the year of movies that were about survival, of a one man, one woman survival kind of movie, or what an individual does in the most harrowing of circumstances. But survival, I feel like it's the year of the survival movie. Everything from Robert Redford, you know, Tom Hanks, of course, Gravity, Sandra Bullock, of course. But then you can also look at, I have not seen it yet, but 12 Years a Slave, a story of survival, whether it's, you know, real survival or kind of like psychic spiritual survival of your humanity. And then you have like Dallas Buyers Club, you know, which is really about just trying to stay alive, you know, and how we unknowingly and unwittingly go through some sort of journey and just trying to, that is the only singleness of purpose. And we're not really trying to change or evolve, but in the will to survive changes us, you know, fundamentally.
Well, I suppose if you looked at that larger, you could take that theme and apply that to every film. You could apply that to Philomena, you know,
mm-hmm.
what that, you know, the Judi Dench character, that woman, what she went through for 50 years surviving, you know, the mental torture of having given up a baby, forced to, or, you know, her, the Spike Jonze film,
yep,
which the guy has to survive. How does he make, you know, a love affair with a computer?
Yeah.
Or even The Wolf of Wall Street. How do you survive after stealing billions of dollars?
Yeah.
How do you come out on top?
Yeah.
It's interesting.
There's like, but I think that there's also like, I was just thinking of it when you just said that about her too. It's like there's this almost isolation that happened this year for character in film. And I'm wondering if it is now becoming a reflection of this technological age that we're in, this idea of us being isolated, even though there's a lot of people
one of the,
around,
the
we're
real
isolated,
issues.
And that seems to be fundamental to Captain Phillips or gravity or, you know, her or, you know,
well, especially her, which is, you know, set in kind of the near future.
Right.
Where it's so recognizable that everybody's walking around the street and talking.
Yeah.
And no one's talking to anybody else.
Yeah.
And they're all having these conversations into the air. And, you know, that your big, the idea that your biggest relationship would be with a microchip, I mean, it's not really far-fetched.
No, it's not. I mean, I think back to like that Sandra Bullock movie like 20 years ago, The Net, where she was a woman who was on her computer and never left her home. And, you know, good Lord, I mean, I was home yesterday in the very cold weather for 15 hours and never saw a person and functioned in front of my computer all day. You know what I mean? So it's like,
right. You
go back then, I thought, well, how odd is that? You know, and then today it's Tuesday. I mean, it's just it's what Tuesday looks like. Well, let's talk about some of the categories before we break for some news and theater scene. Just say that I want to start with the animated feature category because I love animated films. And I know that it's been really interesting that Frozen has been kind of this gangbuster popular financial success and has had this hit song with Idina Menzel that is many
and now the sing-along version.
Gay anthem. Yeah. But this is still an interesting category when you have such a stellar, even if you have, you know, I don't know, just to have like a stellar film that's animated where there's female leads and, you know, I don't know. It just feels like a very queer category to me. I love the animated feature category. Also, they've got Despicable Me and The Croods. I did not see Ernest and Celestine, I guess.
No, I didn't see it either. But
and The Wind Rises.
The Wind Rises, a Japanese film, which has been sort of controversial. It's a beautiful film. Visually, it's stunning. I don't love the subject matter. It's a little problematic for me. But, you know, I'm an old Disney boy. I loved Frozen from beginning to end. I've seen it with my nieces, my nephews, my grandchildren. I mean, as you know, a good friend of mine said, this is tailor-made for this stage. They thought of every angle. You know, as I said, it's already come out in a sing-along version. Of course, they're going to take it right to Broadway. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it just, once again, it's like they've grabbed a fairy tale and sort of, you know, made it more palatable for kind of a new audience. And not just the kids, but the grown-up kids.
Absolutely.
You know, we adult juveniles who will not grow up no matter what what anybody says.
Exactly. Now, I think that, you know, a really interesting category for me and I know you're a writer. The adapted screenplay category is always a really, to me, that category as well as either adapted or original screenplay. Those categories, to me, can really be what filmmaking is about, right? Because it's just, you know, sometimes they don't give the Oscar for Best Picture to somebody who wins those categories, but sometimes they do. Adapted, both these categories are so strong this year. Adapted screenplay is Before Midnight, the Linklater end of the trilogy that they've been doing for the past 20 years with Ethan Hawke and Julie Delpy. Captain Phillips, Philomena, which you mentioned, 12 Years a Slave, and The Wolf of Wall Street. Do you have a thought on that category? Do you think Linklater and Delpy and Hawke will prevail based on, you know, how the time
well,
and the patience
if anything,
to make that story happen?
Right. 20 years of, you know, three or four critically acclaimed films with those two characters that people have fallen in love with and stayed with. So it could be kind of one of those Lifetime Achievement Awards where they say, okay, we'll give it to that. I personally think I mean, it's very interesting that they found this I guess it's a biography, 12 Years a Slave, this couple hundred year old book, and adapted that. I think that's very interesting. I personally think that the screenplay for Philomena, because it's so subtle, it's so filled with these small details, which is very, very hard to do. One of the problems that I had with 12 Years a Slave is that it's really told in broad strokes. And this has kind of been a bit of a criticism about Steve McQueen, the director, is that he doesn't, his characters are not really fleshed out characters. And he's been very lucky with some of the actors he's had to inhabit some of those characters. So, you know, Steve Coogan, who co-wrote the screenplay, you know, co-produced the movie, co-stars with Judi Dench. I mean, obviously, labor of love. I'm not a huge fan of The Wolf of Wall Street. I found the movie entertaining. I liked, you know, sort of, you know, what Scorsese does. He just hypes everything up. But at about the, you know, the hour and a half, you're like, okay, what else have you got here? I mean, I didn't particularly, I don't know if that's maybe because of the characters you're spending this time with. And it just didn't, I don't know.
I think it's definitely a divisive film, and it probably will be, the, you know, on this evening. For original screenplay, it's a really tough category with American Hustle, Blue Jasmine, Dallas Buyers Club, Her, and Nebraska. But I have to say, I think Spike Jonze is a frickin' genius. And if it doesn't go to Her, I don't know that there's, I mean, I just feel like Her has to get this, just because how do you come up with that story?
Well, I'm, it resonated on so many levels. I'm with you on this one. You know, I always, and I'm the worst person to ask about what's going to win the Oscars, because I'm always so torn about.
You and I are very different.
Oh my gosh, what I really want to win and what is probably going to win. I mean, I really think that that probably should win. And I absolutely, there are so many subtleties in that script. I think that Nebraska is really overhyped. Sorry to say that. I grew up in Nebraska. Just throw that in right now.
I've heard that. I've heard that.
And I think that Dallas Buyers Club worked on certain levels.
And
worked really well on certain levels, but it was really hard to take that homophobic character and turn him into kind of this anti-hero and this hero. And I think American Hustle was really entertaining, but is all surface and is all about the wigs, the clothes.
Honestly, I think American Hustle is about a genius five-person character study that I would have watched for hours longer. But it, to me, wasn't about the movie. It was about five performances from five actors who I felt like all five got to do something out of their comfort zone. And I thought that was, as an actor, I thought that is fun to watch. Like, how fun. That's what I loved about American Hustle. I didn't find it's, I found the story just a vehicle to let these people do these five character studies that I loved. I was like, okay, now let's put them on a cruise in the 1970s going to Acapulco. You know what I mean? Like, I was like, now let's put them in Bangladesh. Like, I just wanted to almost like improv scenario and pop those five characters into different scenarios. Like, you know, I was just like, let's just see what they would do. Because I just felt like those five actors were sweating and breathing their characters, and I was having so much fun watching them do that.
Well, and I didn't think that they were out of their comfort zones. I thought that's exactly what an actor loves, is when you give them big hair and big glasses. I mean, come on, that's got to be why Streep loves August on Stage.
Well, I think
you give her the wig and
just
the glasses and the cigarette and the cocktail. And, you know, you get a piece of gum, you get to pop that gum and start talking, and you get that accent, and,
but
you know,
I just think they all knocked down, it like, out of their park. I just think, like, yes, an actor loves that, but if it's not the thing that fits real, that you've done or you don't get asked to do very often, like, I felt like to have Amy Adams play that kind of power sexual vamp is nothing she's ever gotten to play on film. You know, to have Christian Bale, Batman, you know, grow a beer cut, have a comb over. I mean, yes, it's like them all getting to play them something so contrary to everything. And yes, that's fun for an actor, but not every actor can do that. I mean, we're not seeing like Sandra Bullock or Julia Roberts transforming ever into somebody physically looking different or being different. Or, I mean, Erin Brockovich maybe a little bit, but you know what I mean? Like, so all five of them, Jeremy Renner, I thought, just like getting to go that far, you know, I thought, wow, how exciting. Because you could have failed horribly, really easily, any of them. And I didn't feel like any of them did, which I thought was super, super fun.
Yeah. Well, and I'm, you know, don't mean to say that, give the impression I did really enjoy the film.
Yeah.
I was aware from beginning to end that that was Christian Bale. I never lost sight of the fact that that was Jennifer Lawrence.
That's right.
Which is one of the things that I always say about the Coen brothers. I love that they use all these unknown actors.
Yeah.
And I try to, if I'd seen American Hustle with this, I think his name is, what's his name? Oscar Isaac, the guy who played in Inside Llewyn Davis.
Okay.
Or the first time you saw Fargo, nobody knew
Francis
who
McDormand.
William H. Macy was.
Yeah, or William H. Macy. Yeah. No, it's totally, totally true. You don't lose sight of him. Like I said, for me, it was just kind of delicious fun to watch these actors that you knew do something so different. And it was kind of
fun. When you saw Leonardo DiCaprio in Eating Gilbert Grape.
Right.
I thought maybe he is mentally challenged.
That's right.
Oh my gosh, they found this amazing, you know,
brilliant
this guy,
actor.
And he's so good.
Yeah.
And I mean, so that's the thing that's missing for me in some of these bigger star, vehicles, is that I never lose myself. I'm always aware that I'm looking at Amy Adams.
Yeah. Well, we're going to talk about if that held true with the best supporting actor and actress and actor and actress categories when we come back. We're going to break for some news and what's going on in the theater scene. Richard Knight Jr. back with us. What's our picks for best actor, actress, supporting actor, supporting actress, and picture of the year when we come back?
I'm Kirk Williamson.
I'm Amy Matheny.
And this is the Week in News. The ACLU and the ACLU of Missouri filed a lawsuit in state court on behalf of 8 same-sex couples who are seeking recognition for their legal out-of-state marriages. The couples reside in St. Louis, Kansas City, and Springfield. The lawsuit does not seek a repeal of Missouri's ban on marriage for same-sex couples within the state.
In a ruling that could open the door to gay marriage in Kentucky, a federal judge struck down the state's ban on recognizing valid same-sex marriages performed in other states, saying it violates the U.S. Constitution's guarantee of equal protection under the law. U.S. District Judge John G. Habern II joined 9 other federal and state courts in invalidating such bans.
The Transportation Security Administration, or TSA, will allow same-sex couples to undergo pre-flight security screenings together in response to 2 recent incidents with American Airlines personnel at a Colombian airport.
In Illinois, 1 of 2 men charged with beating up and stabbing a Cook County prosecutor who had come to the defense of a gay couple being harassed on the lakefront was sentenced to 4 years in prison. Louis Cotto, 24, had previously pled guilty to aggravated battery in the Chicago attack on the off-duty prosecutor, who suffered cuts, including one that needed 40 stitches.
A man arrested in the death of Clarksdale, Mississippi mayoral candidate Marco McMillan has been indicted on a charge of murder. The Washington Post had reported that McMillan was gay. The circuit clerk's office said that Lawrence Reed was indicted by a grand jury. Prosecutors say phone records indicate McMillan and Reed knew each other before the aspiring politician's nude, battered body was found February 17, 2013.
The Kansas House has approved a bill aimed at keeping individuals, groups, and businesses from being compelled to help with same-sex weddings. The House's 72-49 vote Wednesday sends the measure to the Senate. Supporters describe it as a religious freedom measure, while opponents contend it will encourage discrimination against gays and lesbians.
In Oklahoma, State Senator Al McCaffrey, the Democrat from Oklahoma City, plans to run for the 5th congressional district seat being vacated by Republican U.S. Rep. James Lankford. A United States Navy veteran and former Oklahoma City police officer, McCaffrey was the first openly gay person elected to Oklahoma legislature when he won his state House seat in 2006.
Indiana lawmakers effectively killed a proposed constitutional amendment that would have prohibited marriage equality or any form of legal relationship recognition for same-sex couples. The state Senate passed an amended version of House Joint Resolution 3 without reinstating the language banning civil unions or similar legal relationships that the House removed last month.
Facebook has expanded the way users can identify their genders on their profiles. The need for the social media giant's change is bolstered by a new report on gender-expansive youth, or young respondents who identified as transgender or chose other and wrote in their own terms.
In Texas, WFAA sports director Dale Hansen has been stunned that his defense of newly out football player Michael Sam has gone viral. February 10th, Hansen gave a two-minute speech chastising Sam's naysayers. Since then, the video has had almost 2 million views on YouTube, and Ellen DeGeneres and Piers Morgan asked him to be on their shows.
And Michael Sam received a standing ovation when he appeared in the arena during Missouri's basketball game against Tennessee on February 15th. The All-America defensive end, who could become the first openly gay player in the NFL, later blew a kiss to the student section and shook hands with fans.
Also, ESPN conducted an anonymous survey of 51 NFL players in the wake of Michael Sam's coming out. 41 of the players said a teammate's sexual orientation did not matter to them. Moreover, 39 said they would be comfortable showering around a gay teammate. However, 32 players said that they had had teammates or coaches use anti-gay slurs last season.
Texas State Senator and gubernatorial candidate Wendy Davis, the Democrat, backed gay marriage in an interview. Davis called on her gubernatorial opponent, Attorney General Greg Abbott, to stop defending Texas's ban on gay marriage. Davis was thrust into the national spotlight last year when she staged a 13-hour filibuster in the Texas Senate in an attempt to fight a package of abortion regulations that included a 20-week ban.
Researchers from Northwestern University say they found two components of DNA that play a part in determining if a male will be gay. The findings suggest that genetics do have a significant role in determining sexual orientation, at least for men. The work has not yet been published, nor do the researchers precisely know how significant the link is.
In world news, President Yoweri Museveni of Uganda plans to sign a bill into law that prescribes life imprisonment for aggravated homosexual acts. Museveni announced his decision to governing party lawmakers. President Obama has sharply criticized this legislation that imposes a 14-year prison sentence on people convicted of an initial same-sex act and the possibility of life in prison if convicted of further homosexual relations.
Vladimir Luxuria, Italy's first out transgender elected official, was arrested in Sochi, the site of the Winter Olympics. Luxuria was allegedly arrested after holding a rainbow-colored banner that read, "Gay is okay" in Russian. Luxuria said she had been treated with respect while in detention.
Russian Prime Minister Dmitry Medvedev has signed a decree banning foreign same-sex couples, as well as single people from countries where same-sex marriages are legal, from adopting Russian children. Though there was no official ban until now, foreigners' attempts to adopt Russian children before the decree generally would be unsuccessful if a prospective adoptive parent was thought to be gay. The move comes a year after Russian lawmakers passed a bill banning adoptions to the U.S.
More than 100,000 conservative French people marched through Paris and Lyon, accusing the government of family phobia for legalizing gay marriage and other planned policies they say will harm traditional families. The marchers, expressing growing frustration with the unpopular left-wing government, denounced new sex equality lessons in schools and urged the government not to legalize medical procedures to help same-sex couples have children. France's socialist government has dropped plans to change family law this year after the protests.
Dmitry Kiselyov, a Russian journalist who said gay people's hearts should be burned or buried because they're not fit for transplantation, has been selected by President Vladimir Putin to receive an award for humanitarianism. Kiselyov, whom Putin appointed in December to head the government-owned news agency Rossiya Segundia, was listed as recipient of the Order of Service to the Fatherland in a decree Putin signed.
Matthew Paul Santos, simply known as Santos on MTV Canada's popular One Girl, Five Gays reality TV show, died February 8th at the age of 27. Santos' death is shrouded in mystery. The cause of death has not been announced. He is survived by his boyfriend and his family.
In entertainment news, actress Ellen Page came out as a lesbian in a speech to the Human Rights Campaign in Las Vegas on Valentine's Day. "I'm here today because I am gay," the 26-year-old star of Juno and Hard Candy told the audience. "Maybe I can help others to have an easier time. I am tired of hiding." The actress delivered an emotional speech to Time to Thrive, a conference to promote the welfare of LGBT youth held at Bally's Hotel and Casino in Las Vegas.
Ellen Page and Julianne Moore will co-star in lesbian roles in the indie drama Freeheld. Based on the 2007 Academy Award-winning documentary short of the same name, the film chronicles the true story of the late Laurel Hester, played by Moore, and a New Jersey police detective whose world was shattered when she became terminally ill and government officials prevented her from assigning her pension benefits to her domestic partner, Stacey Andre, who is played by Page.
Openly gay director Lee Daniels of The Butler is teaming with writer Danny Strong for the hip-hop TV drama Empire in Chicago. Empire marks Daniels' debut into television production.
Women in prison drama Orange is the New Black will return for its second season on Netflix June 6th. All just in time for Pride. All 13 episodes of Orange will be available for streaming at launch.
Gay porn company Falcon Studios' new movie, California Dreamin' 1, will be the first ever film to feature condoms that are digitally removed. The company will shoot the video with the models using protection, but will use Photoshop to give the impression it was shot without condoms. Apparently, bareback videos sell better. However, the company is also complying with state safer sex laws.
Fast and Furious actress Michelle Rodriguez, age 35, has confirmed that she is dating 21-year-old British supermodel Cara Delevingne. The pair made news when they were spotted all over each other at a pro basketball game in New York City.
RuPaul's Drag Race has been greenlit for a seventh season. A week later, RuPaul's new single, Geronimo, debuted from the forthcoming album, Born Naked. Those interested in competing in the seventh season of Drag Race should visit rdrcasting.com.
And lesbian musical sisters Tegan and Sarah scored their first Billboard Hot Dance Electronic Songs listing as Everything Is Awesome opened at number 11. The track is from the soundtrack to the box office hit, The Lego Movie.
And that's the Week in News brought to you by Windy City Times.
Hey guys, this is Elizabeth Kina, and you're on the Windy City Queercast. Have a good one.
Culture Club, Culture Club, Culture Club. Theater,
music,
dance,
art,
performance,
provocative,
hilarious,
exciting,
weird,
innovative,
campy,
edgy,
original.
Get some culture in your life.
Join the club.
For the week of February 24th, 2014, you are in Chicago's Culture Club.
Lifeline Theater proudly presents a world premiere adaptation of Charles Dickens' legendary classic, A Tale of Two Cities. This epic tale of resurrection and redemption runs Thursday through Sundays, now through April 6th. For tickets to A Tale of Two Cities and more, visit lifelinetheater.com.
Join Porchlight Music Theater as they transport you back to the Harlem Renaissance and the Golden Age of Jazz in the Tony Award-winning musical review, Ain't Misbehavin', now playing through March 9th at Stage 773. The incredible cast and live jazz band bring to life 30 hits of the legendary Fats Walker, including Honeysuckle Rose, Black and Blue, and, of course, Ain't Misbehavin'. Playing now only through March 9th, only at Stage 773. For tickets, go to porchlightmusictheater.org.
Everything's coming up roses at Chicago Shakespeare Theater. Director Gary Griffin's must-see production of Gypsy has been declared as one of the most anticipated entertainment highlights of 2014 by the Chicago Sun-Times. Don't miss this jewel of American musical theater, now playing through March 23rd. For tickets, visit chicagoshakes.com.
The 25th anniversary season of Profile Theater presents Cock by Mike Bartlett, playing now through April 6th. In this tense comedy about sexual identity, Cock explores one man's choices about which path of love to pursue. The New York Times insists Cock is a feisty, hypnotic, and oddly energizing exercise in emotional carnage. For tickets to Cock, visit profiletheaters.org.
Alvin Ailey American Dance Theater returns to its home in Chicago at the Auditorium Theater for 10 extraordinary performances, February 28th through March 9th. For tickets to Alvin Ailey at the Auditorium, visit Ticketmaster.com.
Hedda Gabler in Writers Theater is hugely compelling and thrillingly intimate, according to the Chicago Tribune. And the Chicago Sun-Times calls Hedda Gabler a lip-smackingly delicious, tabloid-worthy show, awash in sex and power games and self-destruction. For tickets, visit writerstheater.org. Hedda Gabler is now playing at Writers Theater in Glencoe, just minutes from downtown on the Edens or the Metro. And for more Culture Club, visit WindyCityTimes.com.
Anyone out there? Bueller? Bueller? Post a comment at WindyCityQueerCast.com.
It might seem crazy what I'm about to say. Sunshine, she's here, you can take a break. I'm a hot air balloon that could go to space. With the air, like I don't care, baby, by the way.
All right, we are back, and Richard Knight Jr. here with me, the movie queen, the theater and movie critic.
Thank you.
For the Windy City Times. And
10 years.
10 years. We've been doing this a long time, my friend. So, supporting actor, is this a shoe-in for Jared Leto, and is it deserved?
I would certainly think yes on both counts.
Yeah.
And, you know, I had some problems with the film, as I mentioned, but overall, part of it is having lived through that period.
Yeah.
And gay people are going to experience Dallas Buyers Club very differently than the mainstream. And I think it was really, really good that when both he and Matthew McConaughey won those Golden Globes, when they got up and did those speeches, I'm sure you saw Alexandra Billings editorial that was in the HuffPost and you know, they need to be really, really conscious and careful. I would love it if they would realize that there are a lot of people who lived through this and lost so many people. So don't take this lightly. Just because you had to, put on high heels or whatever. Yeah.
He definitely redeemed himself at the Screen Actors Guild Awards. And you felt like, okay, he's telling the Academy that if he wins, he will make a good speech. Like, that to me was what the SAG Awards. Mitchell and I said on the podcast that, like, he obviously read the Huffington Post article by Alexandra Billings. Because it was like she told him what to say and he said that, which was good, you know?
Oh, I missed that. He took that to heart.
He immediately got up and much different, much more sincere, you know, dedicated to the Rayons of the World and the people living with HIV and AIDS or who died from HIV and AIDS and how he learned, so much from playing this part. And, he literally, basically almost stole her article. I mean, it was like,
wow.
Mitchell and I were like, wow,
good.
He really like read that, or somebody sent him that. I will say that the guy, the unknown actor, Barkhad Abdi from Captain Phillips, I thought was just amazing. First time actor. And once again, I just want to say that Bradley Cooper was delicious, and the gay boys will like me for saying it. Even in his little Jerry curl, he was delicious and funny in this movie. And I think it's one of the reasons that it was an early favorite, American Hustle. I don't think on Oscar night it's going to take it home for some of the big awards, but but we'll see.
Well, to me this year, well, you go ahead. We'll when we get to Best Picture, we'll talk about that.
So supporting actress, Jennifer Lawrence, Lupita Nyong'o, I think is how you pronounce her name, Julia Roberts, June Squibb, and Sally Hawkins for Blue Jasmine. Obviously, Lupita has been taking it away. Plus, we all love her fashion sense. The woman has got some great gowns going down the red carpet. But Jennifer Lawrence also... has won as well. It seems like it's kind of a face-off between Jennifer Lawrence and Lupita. Do you have a favorite in this category?
I would say Lupita is my favorite out of this group of actresses. The June Squibb character drove me insane in Nebraska. And as I said, I'm not a huge fan of the film to begin with. I didn't think that Julia Roberts really pulled off the character in August Osage. You know, just the fact that she just doesn't, you know, she's a movie star.
Yep. That's my thing with her. I mean, my thing with her is that she impressed me. I didn't actually expect to like her at all. You know, for me, it just didn't work because she just is Julia Roberts. And I'm a bit August Osage County. I am just tainted because I saw it here at Steppenwolf. And then I saw the national tour with friends of mine in it as well. And I missed the 45 minutes that they cut out of the movie. And I missed in watching the movie, the exhaling that I got to do when they took them out of that house. There is a sense of watching it as a play where the pressure cooker aspect of like somebody get up from this dining room table because we have been sitting in a play for 30 minutes that you don't feel watching it in a movie. You feel too much like I can exhale. Like, okay, now somebody's driving down a street. Nobody drives down a street in a play. You know, like we're in this house with this crazy fucking woman and we're all... You know, we don't smell the monkeys anymore because we're all in the cage. Do you know what I mean?
Sure,
so
sure.
I just felt like the movie lost that for me, even though some of the performances in the movie I liked more than some of the performances on stage of some of the minor characters. But that's my two cents on August Osage County. I haven't seen 12 Years a Slave. As I said, I'm going to watch it this week.
She's very good in the film, and she actually is probably the most humanizing character in the film for me. Well, Chewbacca, of course. But, you know, but as I mentioned earlier, Steve McQueen, something about the, you know, his movies, the characters just don't seem to resonate. I don't know what it is. They're really chilly.
I'll watch it, and I'll give my two cents when we have the actual Oscar night. So is... the actor category, Matthew McConaughey obviously has been walking away with many awards. Chiwetel from 12 Years, Leonardo from Wolf, Bruce Dern, Nebraska, and Christian Bale from American Hustle. I really feel like Matthew McConaughey is going to take this home. I mean, he's so beloved. And I really felt like I will say that I lost him. I lost him in that role. You know,
I absolutely did too, you know, and the thing that I like about, first of all, I have to, before we can get to these five, you mentioned Robert Redford earlier in the show.
Yes.
And I think that this is one of, you know, the biggest oversights of the year. Well, two of them. Number one is that he did not get a nomination for All Is Lost.
And can I tell you, I'm shocked that Tom Hanks didn't, because it is my favorite Tom Hanks movie since probably Big.
That's another oversight.
And the weird thing is he's nominated years where I'm like, really? Okay, whatever. You know, or they go gaga. And I think he's a great guy. Don't get me wrong. Like, I think Tom Hanks is probably somebody that who wouldn't love. And he's done amazing things for American cinema and storytelling. And, you know, but I thought the last 7-10 minutes of Captain Phillips alone deserved an Oscar. If Judi Dench got one for, you know, 6 minutes of Shakespeare in Love. I'm like, that was,
I will take
brilliant.
That 7 minutes over Christian Bale's entire work in American Hustle.
Yeah. Well,
sorry.
I don't know. I mean, I haven't seen all these, so I can't speak to whom I would take out, but I can say that I really, really, you know, Mitchell and I watched, saw Captain Phillips together, and I was just, I didn't expect to love it. I just thought, I'm going to watch it. And it's compelling storytelling. It's not like the most amazing movie ever, but it's compelling storytelling I just wept. I wept at the end of that movie. You know, I just thought he was beautiful.
Great movie. And I, again, can't say enough about Redford's work in All Is Lost.
Yeah.
One thing that I love so much about that character is that, first of all, he's so smart. He's so intelligent. It's somebody who thinks ahead, who does what people would do in that situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He, you know, you're like, why is he putting that suit on, or why is he doing that? Well, because he's thinking about what's going to happen an hour later.
Yeah.
And then you see it. Oh, he's an experienced guy.
Yeah.
And it was a very methodical.
I really want to see that. I saw the most interesting interview with the filmmaker and him on Charlie Rose. And I don't know, maybe it just came through here very fast, or I don't know, but I didn't see it too early.
They released it too early, and Redford has said, and he's right, that unfortunately it wasn't hyped enough.
Mm.
And I think even he did actually a little bit more than he normally does with, you know, the kind of the gland handing.
Yeah.
But it got great reviews. It's a great film.
Yeah.
It's J.C. Sandor, the guy who did Margin Call.
That's right. Which is another movie I have not seen. And after doing the play Enron, I've always wanted to see it. So I'm just going to do a weekend of watching those movies at some point. The actress category, you have a favorite? Amy Adams, Kate Blanchett, Sandra Bullock, Judi Dench, Meryl Streep?
This is a really, really tight category. Again, I would have taken probably Emma Thompson over Amy Adams for Saving Mr. Banks. I loved Kate Blanchett in Blue Jasmine.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of those fully realized, I mean, it's a modern day Stella, Streetcar Named Desire, and she runs with it, and she is funny and moving and thorny and so many brilliant things and that you love to watch, and it's all in the details.
Yep.
And yet I loved Judi Dench, because we saw some in Philomena that you very rarely get to see from Judi Dench on screen, because she does what she's hired to do, which is kind of, you know, be very bitchy and witty and tell people to buzz off in that accent.
Mm-hmm.
And you saw this subtlety, you saw this interior performance where it's all in a little look, a little gesture, a sigh, an intake of breath. This is what I think we do not appreciate very much. We didn't appreciate this in Glenn Close and Albert Nobbs, where it's all about one tiny little subtle thing, which is what movie acting in sometimes, you know, it is. But it can also be about this huge, huge, big scenery-chewing Meryl Streep, you know, where she's clutching the cigarette and telling off everybody, and you're just like, well, okay, let her go. Everybody stand back.
Yep.
I think I said in my review, there needs to be a rule.
Yep.
You know, acting with dogs, with kids, or with Meryl Streep.
It's true. I have to say that I saw Blue Jasmine right when it came out, and I said, I don't care what else happens this year, she is going to win the Oscar.
Mm.
And I just feel like, you know, as you said, this is a modern day Blanche DuBois from Streetcar Named Desire. And, you know, she has played that role at her own theater in Australia. She came to Broadway in the U.S. and played that role. And then Woody Allen, you know, like wrote a modern day movie, probably because he supports New York theater and probably because he saw her in it and then like wrote this, you know. And I just think like she has just marinated in that character for so long that once again, I just felt like she disappeared and just,
well, you know, he's very famous for just not saying anything, and she's talked about this, and the same thing with Diane Weiss, who won two Oscars in Woody Allen's pictures, and in oh my gosh, Bullets Over Broadway, she had no clue what she was doing and came in and said, okay, I'm going to try this, and he basically said, yeah, that's good.
Yep.
And I think Kate Blanchett had the same idea, like, I have no idea, should I go way over the top, and should I, and she decided to do that, and he said, okay, good, and because of maybe she had done this play or experience or technique, whatever, I mean, that's one reason why she deserves to win right there, because she basically directed herself.
Yeah, she's just, I mean, she's just so good in it. I mean, it's the same way I felt when I watched the woman play Edith Piaf years ago, and I was like, I saw that movie, and I was like, she is going to win. She's going to win, and she
Marion did. Marion Cotillard, yeah.
And, all right, well, we got to wrap up, but before we do, we've got these nine films, very different films this year, so many different films nominated. Do you have a movie of the year? Do you think there's a... What do you think should win and what do you want to win? Or what do you think will win and what do you want to win?
Is it
even a tight race, or where do you think it's going to go?
I think it's going to come down to three movies, American Hustle, Gravity, or 12 Years a Slave.
Mm-hmm.
I would say that I really had a great time at Gravity.
Mm-hmm.
It's really very emotional, and I was, you know, I won't be upset if Sandra Bullock wins. You know, she's a movie star, and it's mm-hmm. okay for movie stars to win Oscars. 12 Years a Slave is one of those pictures that you just it just kind of is burned into your mind. It's not enjoyable. It's very horrific to watch it.
Yeah.
But how many times have we awarded the African American experience?
Yeah,
you know. American Hustle, as I said, it's a really enjoyable picture, but it has no depth as far as I was concerned.
Yep. So you think it's between those three. What do you want to win? What would, if you could go, this is what I really think is the best movie this year?
Wow.
Of that category. Let's
Oh, it's so tough.
Yeah.
I would say probably Gravity. It's one of the few pictures that they showed all the critics, and they said, okay, we're going to show it again at the IMAX. And every single critic said, I want to come back and see it in the IMAX.
Because of you, I saw it in an IMAX. You and I talked, and you said, go see it in 3D in the IMAX. And I think Alfonso Cuarón will win director. And I think that will, because it is just, I was telling my mother in Tennessee today, I was like, you and your lady friends go see Gravity at the IMAX. They're going to have to drive to the next town because we don't have an IMAX in our hometown. But she's like, oh, you think so? I was like, yes, just go. It's like an experience, you know? It's like an 85-minute experience you need to have. I will tell you, now, I have not seen everything. I have seen all movies except Nebraska, Philomena, and 12 Years, I think. I will say the movie I think should win is Her. And I think it's because, to me, it is the freshest movie speaking on all forms of film language, from the sound to the costumes to the look to the performances to the story to the cinematography to every element. To me, it is speaking to something new and fresh, and there is no retread about it. There is nothing that, like, I mean, even one could say Gravity is like, we've had a space movie before, you know? And so they just did this one a whole hell of a lot better.
Oh, it's the ultimate man versus the elements, as you said, at the top.
Of course.
This is the ultimate version of that, sure.
Absolutely. But I just saw Her this week, and I have to say, I was just... I didn't expect to love it as much as I did. And I really did love it. I mean, to me, it won't win. I hope it wins original screenplay. I am kind of surprised Joaquin Phoenix is not nominated. I thought somebody who normally makes me feel scary and offsettled and a little like, that's what you hire Joaquin Phoenix for. I thought he pulled me in. I couldn't get close enough to him. I just was drunk with his melancholy. I was charmed by him. His eyes alone, I filmed him to be a modern day Charlie Chaplin. I just thought I thought the whole movie was so breathtaking and really said something new about movies and movies commenting and reflecting on mirroring, you know, who we are and where we're going. And I just can't say enough about it. So if you have not seen Her, I strongly recommend you see it.
And obviously,
I have to say, too, I agree with you. I didn't say this and you mentioned it, but I really thought Emma Thompson gave one of the most beautiful performances this year, too. And you mentioned why you liked Judi Dench and the subtleties of Glenn Close. And I would say that I found Emma Thompson's performance crushing. just absolutely crushing. And I actually really loved that movie. You know, I think in another year it should have been in the top nine. And maybe it's because I'm a big Mary Poppins fan and it gave me a whole other lens through which to see that movie. I just found that to be a delicious movie. And I, like I said, just found her performance crushing in that. Just, you know,
I felt the same way. I know that there's been, some criticism from the community because, her lesbian proclivities were not as pronounced. But as Emma Thompson has said, we're looking at a certain period of her life.
Yeah.
And some of that is conjecture.
Yeah.
And I certainly don't mind conjecture at all.
It doesn't seem relevant at all to the story they were telling.
It didn't seem particularly relevant to that point. And I know that there have been criticism that maybe it's soft-pedaled Walt Disney's character and blah, blah, blah.
I don't know. It didn't really matter to me. It wasn't even about those people. To me, it was a story of a mother... A daughter and a father.
Their father.
And who knew that that's what Mary Poppins was about? And, you know, and maybe because I'm female or I don't know, maybe you don't have to be female, but, you know, our love affairs with our fathers, you know, as our heroes. And who knew that it was what that was what that movie, what that was what that story and that movie was about. And what you get from that movie.
I would much rather see Colin Farrell with a supporting nomination than some of those actors. He breaks your heart her father. He really does.
Yeah. Okay, good. We're so in sync. We're gonna see if they're gonna go our way on March 2nd.
They probably won't.
Well, it is so much fun to predict and gab with you, my friend, about the Academy Awards. It's the 86th year. And they are happening on March 2nd. So we'll be talking about them after the awards, talking about the dresses and the outfits.
And Ellen. Oh, fun to have
Ellen
back.
Hosting. It's going to be a really queer night with Ellen there.
Love that.
And it's a gayish year for film a little bit, you know? It's not one of our best and not one of our worst. So that's saying something, I think. But Richard Knight Jr., thank you so much for being with us. And everybody,
you're welcome, anything.
Everybody, get out and see those last movies that you have not seen, so you too will be informed and educated, and you'll have your opinion. If you're at an Oscar party that night, you can cast your vote knowing you have all the information. So everybody have a good week. And Richard, thanks so much for being with us.
Always my pleasure, darling.
All right, everybody, stay warm, and we'll see you on Oscar night. Thanks for listening to another Windy City Queercast. Special thanks to our Queercast family, Kirk Williamson, newscaster, and Di Sturkey, production editor. I'm Amy Matheny, your host. Please comment on our shows at WindyCityQueercast.com and iTunes. The next Queercast is only days away, so don't miss it. Subscribe today. Windy City Queercast. Queer and now.